Good to see everyone tonight. Tonight we're going to be looking at the conquest of Canaan. We follow the descendants of Abraham through drought, bondage in Egypt, and a rather harassing journey across a lot of desert and some rough terrain. And with all of their complaining and just unpleasantness going across, God got so fed up with them that finally he said, this generation is not going into the promised land. They're going to die in the wilderness, and I will give the promised land to their descendants. So it's those people that we see tonight, or we're going to be looking at tonight, and see what their experiences have been at this point. When we get down to the beginning of a lesson like this, there are some things that we need to kind of establish in our minds so that we know, can make relationship with the things that are going on and what God has in store for them. When Moses was leading the children of Israel through the wilderness, the desert, and their wanderings around there while they're waiting for a generation to die off, Moses lost his temper one day, and he said some things he shouldn't have said. God told him to speak to the rock, and water would come forth. God was going to give him water for the second time, miraculously. But Moses went out and being irritated with the people for their constant bickering and complaining, he smote the rock and made a statement in conjunction with his action, must we bring you water? Well, all Moses was doing was sending a signal. God had told him to speak to the rock, not smite it. And as a consequence of that, God told Moses that he was not going to see the land of Canaan. He would see it from a distance, but he would not be permitted to enter the land. And Moses really kind of begged God to let him go. He'd been this far with the people and he would like to see the land. But God was stern about what he'd said. He told Moses, don't bring it up anymore. You're not going into the land. And that left Moses in the situation where for the people to have a leader going into the land, someone's not going to have to be set up to be that leader. Well, if you go to Numbers 27, start with about verse 12, God was talking to Moses and telling him what he should do, that he should basically lay his hands on Joshua and ordain him as his replacement, and then take him to the priest, and the priest would do the blessings and cleansing ceremony over Joshua and introduce Joshua to their new leader. Well, it went through with that, and they got ready to go into the land. Joshua had them set up to go into the land, but on the way he sent a message. He sent two messengers, really. No, he sent two spies. And They went to Jericho to spy out the city to see what was the attitude of the people. Were they angry? Were they scared? Were they mad? What? But he wanted to know what it was. And from that we get the story of Rahab and the spies and her kindness to them, which permitted them to escape certain death and make it back to Joshua with the children of Israel. Now, they were sent before or about the time that the Israelites started their traverse across the river of Jordan. Well, when they got to Jordan, you would have expected them to go into business pretty soon there, but they had some religious things that they had to take care of. All during the time when they had been in the wilderness, they had abandoned the ritual of circumcision for the males. So in order to be clean in sight of God, Joshua? I guess whichever one we want to say, right? But anyway, Joshua held the people up at a place called Gilgal, and they circumcised every male in the camp. And after they had healed up, then they started their trip over to Jericho. And we know the story of Jericho. They were to go there and march around the city one time a day for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, they were to march around it seven times. And then they were to raise their voices and shout. And God did the rest. The walls all fell down. And the children of Israel marched up into the city and they took the goods and did what God wanted with them. Basically, everything was to be destroyed. Because Jericho, being the first city conquered by these people, God looked upon it as first fruits unto him. And it was to be a sacrifice to God. The people were not to participate in the using of anything from Jericho. But Achan, and we know his story too, Achan spotted a Babylonian garment and some silver bars and maybe some other trinkets and things, and he stored them away and hid them in his tent. Well, after they got settled down and ready to go to the next place, they decided to go to Ai, and they didn't figure it'd take a whole big force to take Ai. It was a small place, and they just a few hundred men should be able to take it. Wrong. They got to Ai, and they found out God was serious about what he had said about Jericho. They didn't know that was a problem at the time, but they knew he wasn't with them, and he allowed them to be whipped rather soundly. They went back to their camp at Gilgal, and incidentally, they used this camp basically for the whole time of the conquest. They would be based out of Gilgal until they had basically secured the country and were able to move in and partake of the old grain, as they called it, of the land one time, and then they moved on to other conquests. Well, I want to march you through these conquests tonight on the charts. I think I've got some tonight that will be a little bit easier to relate to the story than some of them have been in the past. And I apologize for that. But I want to talk regarding the lesson that, as we have, Okay, here is the passages that I was talking about just a minute ago. It says, and this is God's final instructions to Moses. And he told him to get up in this mountain and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou also shall be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was. And then God goes on and he talks about the reason for him not being able to go into the land, and had some instruction for him as he was there. And Moses was really kind of put down about this, I think. He dearly wanted to be permitted to go into the land, but God said, because you didn't give me the credit at the rock in the wilderness, you're not going to go into the land, so don't bring the subject up anymore. And it was from that basis that he went through the process, and you can read about the things that happened for that ceremony in about Numbers 28 through 31 or 2. And starting in verse chapter 33 of Numbers, you can get a good feel for where the people have been, because there's a catalog there of every stopping place through the whole time they had been in transit. And it's kind of interesting reading. If you take a look at it, they had been in a lot of places and very few. There may be two or three places that are something we can find today. By and large, there are no ways to put the route together. Other than you've got a bunch of names, and we don't know whether those were cities or mountains or what, but they talk about stopping at different places and how long they were there and all of that kind of thing. I suppose if you wanted to spend the time on it, you could basically reconstruct from the one or two points where they did know where they were. You could backtrack somewhat. But anyway, Moses is not going to get to go over. And Joshua has encountered his first problem with the people. Joshua turned out, and I can relate to, say, a man like Joshua, who followed Moses almost from the time they left Egypt. He was Moses' right-hand man. And he had held Moses' arms up, or hold them up when the outcome of a battle would depend on it. And he just did anything Moses asked, but apparently didn't seem to get too concerned about things from an aggressive standpoint. He was one of these guys that they'll do anything you want, but you have to tell them. And that's not what the children of Israel wanted. That wasn't what they needed. But that was one of the things that was of concern, apparently, to not only to Moses, but God himself. They didn't have any back record to say how Joshua would react under pressure. And buddy, let me believe you me, he was going to be under some pressure before this thing's over. But Joshua turned out to be a rather savvy tactician. He knew how to win battles. He knew how to guide his people. He knew how to direct them. And he knew how to discipline. And he knew, and I suppose from seeing Moses do it more than once, he knew that if a person had violated something that was offensive to God, you didn't wait around to see if God was going to tell you to do it. You took the initiative, and you get that job done. And that's what he did in the case of Achan and the goods that he stole basically from Jericho after it had been conquered. Okay, so as we go on, in this view graph, I want to point out just a few things that will be of interest to us as we go on. When we see the people first, they're down around here in this area. One of the things that they did before they crossed over, they conquered the area that that Reuben was to occupy, which would be north of the of Moab, and on up to along by here. Gad would have the central part, and then Manasseh, the son of Jacob, or Joseph, would have the part up here. And you can see Manasseh had parts on both sides of the river at that point in time. And Gad here in the center, Reuben down here, and then on this side, we had, at that point in time, nothing had been conquered. And all we had is the ones on the east side. They, when they were coming through there, and they had problems with the people in Moab, they didn't want to give them food and water. But God had told them that they were not to bother these people. Same thing down here with Seir and the Edomites. And the same thing with Ammon. Ammon was kind of displaced, but still not bothered. So when the people came up in here, they conquered the Amorites that are here, did away with their king, went up to Bashan and conquered their area, did away with the king that was up there. I think it was Og up here and I can't remember his name down here. Phison. What?
Phison.
Phison, yeah. So when they had settled that, the people of Israel and Moses had been rather concerned about, why would I leave you over here when you haven't fought anything to help us conquer the land that God promised us? They promised that they would leave their wives and herds and everything and go across and stay and fight as long as they were needed to conquer this part of the land. Okay, so here's where we sit. Jericho is right here. Gilgal is just a little bit away from it, closer to the river. And Jericho, when it is destroyed, then the people were going to go up the river just a little ways, up to Ai. And Ai, I guess that's Ai right there. No, it's right back up here. Ai at Bethel. Now, that's a place, if you remember, when Abraham first went into the country, he first went to Shechem, and he spent a night or so there, and then went on to an area between Ai and Bethel. There was a mountain there that he used as his headquarters, and that's where he based his actions, basically, until he went down to Egypt and came back from Egypt, and then he and Lot decided to part company at that point. So from the Bethel Ai area, right along in here, Lot picked the area around the Dead Sea, or around the Jordan Valley, which was beautiful for raising animals and feeding them out, but it got him away from Abraham. And it was after this action had taken place, when Abraham was given the land down in here, God told Abraham, said, now I know. Well, at this time, I'm getting ahead of myself. At this time, what God did was promise him the land specifically. In the past, he had talked about a land and a nation and a seed, but now he identified the land basically to Abraham, said, this is the land that will be given to your descendants. Okay? So, tonight, as we're talking about it, we have Joshua and the people right down here at the top of the Dead Sea at Jericho and Gilgal. Okay. Any comments or questions? I want to spend just a minute talking about some of the other people that had an interest in the land that's being given to Abraham's seed. Here in this chart, we're looking at what's labeled the sea people. These are people who either lived on an island like Crete or in a peninsula like this in Greece or over here on the shore of Spain, or back up into areas like this. And they were on constant movement because of their trade, which was basically dependent on the ocean. But you can see that they move around from Cyprus and up all around the shore. And those are the people that came down here and liked what they saw right along this coastline. Okay? So, from along about here, I think that mouse got dropped a little far down from what I would put it, but Gaza here is reported to be one of the best ports in the Mediterranean. If you look at this shoreline as it goes up through here, it's smooth all the way up to about here. The people at Tyre and Sidon had built ports, and one of the Caesars, well, Herod himself, built a port here at Dor and dedicated it to the Caesar. That's why it's called Caesarea. And at this port, that's where the Romans, who were based in this part of the world, that was basically where their headquarters were. Right here at Caesarea, which is basically Old Dor. And it was built by Herod to show the Romans that he was their boy. And it was a real popular place. In fact, it had been identified as the Las Vegas of the Middle East. It was a playboy town, even back then. And they apparently knew how to play. But anyway, wanted to point that out to you. And the people who settled in here, the Philistines, were a thorn in the flesh of God's people for as long as they lived. As long as they occupied this land, they had these people to deal with, and these were a rough, strong people. And they didn't like the Israelites. And when the land was divided, the land that would have come up against the Philistines was given to Dan. Dan abandoned it and went back up here near Kadesh and Mount Hermon and found him a place up there to live. But he basically abandoned the land that he was assigned and went up there. Part of his maneuvering as he went into the land. Okay? Next, I want to show you a couple of charts. This one talks about Joshua's central and southern campaigns. Now, the southern part will be these right along here. North is right up yonder, and south is down here. So it goes from southwest to northeast, as we would think about it. But north on this chart is up here. Joshua and his forces are basically right here, Gilgal and Jericho. And they left here, and you can see the line that they took. Joshua basically cut the land in two, between top and bottom. He made it certain that the people from the north would not be able to come back and join in with the fighting, because basically the children of Israel owned this land all through here, because they had made conquest at all of these places you see. And then after they conquered that, Joshua turned his attention south, and he went down here and conquered all of these. So basically Joshua has cut this part of the land that they're going to inherit off from what's north. And the people in the north have no ability really to come down and join it with the game. But when we look at the next chart, we're going to see after this, Joshua breaks out and goes up the river and joins them up there. And that's what we're talking about here. This is another shot, but this is the north end of the thing. And you can see Joshua's trail and his setups and places. And as he penetrated up here to the north, the five kings in the north had all gotten together and formed a coalition. I never did know a coalition that worked too well. But this one, Joshua burned the city to the ground before they could even get started. So he had a quick victory up here in this area and basically had everything from where Dan ultimately decided to build, everything north of there in Galilee and all the way down to the Dead Sea. So with this, and looking at the accomplishments that Joshua had done with this, you see, the children of Israel basically own everything from this top of this map all the way down to the Dead Sea. And none of the people are in a position to really raise any strong opposition to him. But there's another thing that goes with it. Also, the land in here on this chart, what I'm showing you is this pinkish looking area all along here, all of this, and up into Galilee. That belongs to the children of Israel at this point. They have it under control, but it's by a good bit shy of where God had told him he would give them. And one reason that God said that he would no longer fight their battles for them was because they made deals with some of these people and would allow the people to continue to live in the areas with them. And that wasn't what God wanted. And he said, for that reason, you fight your own battles. I'll no longer fight them for you. So when they got to about this position in their conquest of the country, the people that were other from outside of Shem's family, most of them were descendants of Ham. Some of them were descendants of other people. But all of the people that occupied this land, the Hittites are part of it, the Girgashites, the Ammonites, the Philistines, the Moabites, the Edomites, all of these, Amorites back over in here, all of these people didn't like the children of Israel being in their country. And they fought them every chance they had. And those are things that Joshua had to deal with all during the time he was here. Now, when they got most of this settled down, and on this chart, there are a lot of black dots. Okay? Those are cities in that land that now Joshua and them own, with the exception of those right here in Philistia. They're going to have to fight for them. They're going to have to fight along in here. The Hittites are up here. The Canaanites have moved basically off of the chart on the top. But if you take the Canaanites, and Canaan was a son of Ham. Canaan was one that was cursed. And these people have just become deadly enemies to God's people that God has put right in here. Okay. Anybody have a question or comment at this point? Joshua had a good chief of staff. Very good. He knew how to fight wars. Another little point that goes along with that. A lot of the better military tactics can be discovered by watching how these people did their job. And guerrilla warfare, believe it or not, was invented by these people. And we see that coming when the Hasmoneans come on the surface. In the time between the two testaments. The Hasmoneans were people who fought against basically the division of the Greek Empire that resulted when Alexander the Great died. But the people came in and the Archelaus, I believe it was, went in and made a sacrifice of a pig in the temple just to insult the Jews. And the Hasmonean family were rather incensed about that and proceeded to give the Greeks, and after the Greeks, the Egyptians, they gave them fits, fellas. Until finally they were ousted from the land or either gave up. But yeah, God was basically directing Joshua on how to go about these things. Joshua was a good field general. He knew how to take orders from his master, and he executed them very well. But that's what we see happening here. And all of this land is broken up, and in this chart, I want to show you just what the people had really signed on to. Reuben was given this area right here. He didn't have to go across Jordan to get his inheritance. Gad got this part just north of Reuben, and then Bashan, this area up here, was given to Manasseh. On the other side, Naphtali was on the north side of the Sea of Galilee, Zebulun on the kind of west side, Issachar on the bottom, Asher up the coast, and incidentally, this area up through here, in history, you'll want run into it as the Phoenicians. What were the Phoenicians? What were they famous for? Pardon? Yeah. They stayed on the ship all the time, just about. They built ships. They flew. They sailed ships. They used them for cargo carriers, people carriers, whatever. But these people right up through here, those were the Phoenicians. And then Manasseh on this side, basically across the river from his other half of his territory. And then Ephraim, what tribe was Ephraim? Huh? He's Joseph's. One of his sons. And this is the area where Ephraim, I always kind of looked at it, they wanted to be invited to the party, but they didn't want to be invited in time to bring anything. They just wanted to get there and be welcomed after the party has basically started and about over with. And they caused a lot of trouble. And one of the main instigators of the trouble that arose between the two parts of rose in the time when Solomon was basically coming to the end of his life, and his kingdom was going to be passed on to somebody. Well, the somebody that made the biggest pitch was a man from here. And he wanted the majority of the kingdom and got it because of the discussions that came up between him and Rehoboam and Solomon, really. Solomon and David. David beforehand had probably not laid the groundwork as well as he could have because he left that to his son Solomon. But anyway, the places that they inherited are laid out on here. And a lot of these cities that you see, you notice there's one nation, one tribe not mentioned on here. Well, there may be two on here. No, one of them, Dan, is here. But Levi is not mentioned. Anybody tell me why? Okay. Levi was the nation's contribution to the temple. They had to serve the temple, and all of the worship, basically, was to be served by the Levites working in their capacity. Now, during their lifetimes, the Levites basically lived off of what was given as tithes by the people. The temple was manned by that. The sacrifices were manned. And I've got to shut up. I'll talk to y'all later.